And we move now to chapter 42. And we come to a passage which you know beautifully well. Chapter 42, verse 1 to 4. Here is my servant whom I uphold. And the Septuagint includes the word Israel. It's not in the Masoretic Hebrew text. But a little warning, I had the assumption when I was young and I didn't know anything much, know a little bit now. I just assumed that if the Greek and the Hebrew were different, the Hebrew is the one you'd follow, because it's the original language. And that makes a bit of sense, except that the Masoretic text is fairly lately established. And so I've realised now that sometimes the Greek Septuagint is a more trustworthy text in relation to the original than the Hebrew Masoretic text. So you're often in doubt which is the one to base. But I'm letting you know that in the Greek they do include the word Israel, and I think it's absolutely valid even if it wasn't in the original. So the servant that's being spoken about is Israel, the people. Here is my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one, in whom my soul delights. That's critically important to us in the New Testament because they're the words used in Jesus' baptism. The word pais in Greek, because the New Testament's in Greek, can mean son or servant, either. So pais would mean servant. In the Greek New Testament, pais is interpreted as huios, son. So otherwise it's the same text. Here is my son whom I uphold, depending on which gospel you read, it might be the one I love, my chosen one in whom my soul delights. Why is that in the drama of the baptism, a voice from heaven hearing it? Because the author, Mark, Peter's gospel, and then Matthew and Luke and John, wants you to go to this text and read it. Because the baptism of Jesus, they couldn't find in their literature a poem that more beautifully expressed what happened to Jesus at the baptism than this one. So let's look at it. Because you can't just stop there, you've got to keep reading. Here is my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit on him. He will establish for the nations an order based on justice. That's very Isaiah, isn't it? He will not shout or raise his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break. John the Baptist thought he was not only going to break a bruised reed, but he was going to chop the tree down, and where it landed, that's where it was going to cop it, and the axe would be laid to the root of it. John the Baptist was a moral rearmament kind of a person who thought the Messiah would come and sort us all out. Sheep, goats, in, out. Joy, slaughter. You know, like to clean the world up, so only us are left. And by the way, there are religious movements around the world, still balmy ones, that they're going to be zapped up on the last day, and the rest of us, Catholics particularly, I have to say, will be damned forever because they're all going to be assumed somewhere, and then they'll come back for 1,000 years and rule the earth. Oh dear, oh dear. Well, back to our text. I've put my, and he will not shout, a bruised reed he will not break. A dimly burning wick he will not quench. He will establish an order based on justice. He will not grow faint. It's not that he's weak. It's that he's meek, strong but gentle. He will not grow faint or be crushed until he has established in the earth an order based on justice, and the coastlands are waiting for his Torah, in the Hebrew, for his law. So that text spoken to these people, it's about mission. It's not just about being loved by God, which they are, but that's what they have as their mission, to take to the ends of the earth, the coastlands, the Torah. Because only when they went to Babylon did they wake up to the fact that got these poor people here, they've got this very advanced civilization, and they've got such balmy ideas about God. Eyes that do not see, you know, that ears that do not hear, and it's all very economic, and it's all a very wrapped up in their own country, and they're not aware of this magnificent, transcendent God. So they realized, shocked, they've got a mission. They've got to tell these people, and then they've got to tell the whole world. And that goes right back to Abraham, doesn't it? Many nations, etc. And Paul picked that up. And that's why Paul saw himself as living Judaism in the most marvelous way by becoming a Christian, a disciple of Jesus. Because that's what Judaism should be, Paul saw. Now, again, not many listened. Thus says God Yahweh, who God Yahweh is in very rarely used in the Bible, those two words put together, and you'll find them in the beginning of the book of Genesis. God Yahweh said, Yahweh God, you know, those two together. So we're in the same milieu. Thus says God Yahweh, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it, who gives breath to the people upon it, this is Genesis stuff, and the spirit to those who walk in it. I, Yahweh, have called you to righteousness. I've taken you by the hand and I've kept you. I've given you as a covenant to the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, bring out prisoners from the dungeon, and from the prison those who sit in darkness. All of that is meant to be read when you look at the baptism of Jesus and see his sense of mission. So he goes into the desert, then he comes out, and at different times in the gospel, these bits are quoted, as you well know. I will lead the blind by a road that they do not know. By paths they have not known, I will guide them. I will turn the darkness before them into light, and the rough places into level ground. These are the things I will do, and I will not forsake them. They shall be turned back and utterly put to shame, those who trust in carved images, who say to cast images, carved or cast, you know, molten, you are our gods. That's what they saw they were doing in Babylon. And they said, this is hopeless. Hence the second commandment. You shall not make... Yeah. Chapter 42, verse 18 to 20. How can the prophet preachers expect the people to listen? I think this is the theme. They were blind and deaf to God's prophetic word before. Why should they be expected to see and hear now? The prophet preachers begin by highlighting the chronic blindness and deafness of the people whom Yahweh has chosen as his servant to carry out his will in the world. And this goes back to, you remember the vision of Isaiah? They will not listen, you will speak, but they won't listen. Chapter 6 of Isaiah here. Listen, you that are deaf. So the people aren't responding too well. You that are blind, look up and see. Who is as blind as my servant or as deaf as the messenger whom I send? You know it doesn't mean physical blindness, don't you, or physical deafness, okay? Who is as blind as my dedicated one or as blind as the servant of Yahweh? The people, he sees many things, but he doesn't observe them. His ears are open, but he's not hearing. And there's plenty of that in the gospel as well. And we're all sadly guilty of that. Isaiah 42, 21 and the following talks about God's anger against Israel. I'll leave it unread and we'll move to chapter 43. But now, so there's been a lot of blindness and deafness, but now, thus says Yahweh, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, don't fear, for I have redeemed you. I've bought you back. I've paid the ransom. I've got you out of slavery. I've called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. Waters, are you with me? Red Sea, Jordan. When you pass through the rivers, Jordan, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am Yahweh your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Saviour. I give Egypt as your ransom, Ethiopia and Seba in exchange for you. Egypt, a great powerful nation. Well, I'll sell them so I can buy you, you know. Because you're precious in my sight and honored, and I love you. I give people in return for you, nations in exchange for your life. Don't fear, for I am with you. I'll bring your offspring from the east. From the west I will gather you. I will say to the north, give them up, and to the south, do not withhold. I will bring my sons from far away and my daughters from the ends of the earth. You are my witnesses, says Yahweh. You are my servant whom I have chosen, so that you may know and believe and understand that I am. Anihu, ego, eimi. Here it is again. We did plenty of that. I won't do it again. Before me no God was formed, and there won't be any after me. I am the Lord, or Yahweh. Besides me there's no Saviour. I declared and saved and proclaimed when there was no strange God among you. And you are my witnesses, says Yahweh. I am God. Henceforth, Anihu. I am He. I am. There's no one who can deliver from my hand. I work, and who can hinder it? So, obviously, the text is encouraging the people to realize that they've got this wonderful gift of Yahweh as their God, and they don't have to get caught up in all this other stuff. The text then goes on to talk about some earlier themes. There's a polemic against idolatry, which your take has read yourself. Then Yahweh invites his people into intimate communion. And in chapter 45, which I'll now move to, there's this oracle about Cyrus, the Persian king who is conquering east and west and approaching Babylon. I am Yahweh. There's no other. Beside me there's no God. So you can see we're heading into monotheism, aren't we? But I keep reminding you the monotheism is the people who were told about being one God, and it's not unlike for us, I would think. I don't know how many monotheists there are in the world, I wouldn't know. And I don't know that I am. Put to the test, I mightn't be either. So I presume that Catholics and Lutherans in Germany in 1935 would have said they would have ticked the box and said we're monotheists. And I bet the French would have, and the British would have, and probably everyone in the world just about would say, oh yeah, we're monotheists. We're one of the monotheistic religions, Christianity. Bang, shh, boom, etc. So, Jesus was a monotheist, St. Francis of Assisi was a monotheist. That's the end of my list. Maybe there must have been a few more. I am Yahweh, there is no other besides me, there's no God. I gird you with strength, though you do not know me, so that you may know from the rising of the sun to its setting, east to west, that there is no one beside me. I am Yahweh, there is no other. As against that literature, let me read to you from the clay cylinder of Cyrus, 438 BC. And it reads like this. Marduk scoured all the lands for a friend, seeking for an upright prince. He called Cyrus, king of Anshan. Cyrus is writing this, by the way. He nominated him to be ruler over all. He, Marduk, see? Our text is saying it was Yahweh. The Babylonians are saying it's Marduk. To them, Cyrus tried to behave with justice and righteousness. Marduk, the great lord, compassionate to his people, looked with gladness on his good deeds and his upright intentions. He gave orders that he go against his city, Babylon. The king, the god of Babylon, gave orders to Cyrus to go into Babylon. Identical with early Isaiah having God send Nebuchadnezzar or Sennacherib into Judah for the same purpose. He made him take a road to Babylon and went at his side like a friend and comrade. So there's their propaganda, let's call it. The Persian record claims that Marduk chose Cyrus to capture Babylon. Not so, says the preacher. It's Yahweh who chose him for the sake of Israel. And now an extraordinary one-off text to be treated with great care. Chapter 45, verse 7 says, I form light and create darkness. I make well-being and I create woe. I, Yahweh, do all these things. This extraordinary and in the Bible unique statement stresses the all-embracing nature of God's power. But it breaks the careful theological balance that you find in so many other texts, in which darkness and sin are not created by God, though they are not independent of God's lordship. You would know in the beginning, Genesis, in the beginning there was darkness over the deep. It doesn't say God created it. The darkness is already there in the beginning. It's over the swirling waters. Then God comes in and creates light and separates light from darkness, but it doesn't create darkness. And so there's many texts that are struggling with the problem of evil, really, and recognizing that evil does darkness, symbolic of it, chaos. Darkness, chaos, evil don't come from God. They don't know what to say about them, really. They're just like a given. But they come, you know, the flood comes because of human sin and so on. Here, the next verse takes us back to a drop down dew, O heavens, from above. We sing this in the Advent season. Drop down dew, O heavens, from above. Let the skies rain down righteousness. Let the earth open that salvation may spring up, and let it cause righteousness to sprout up also. I, Yahweh, have created it. The prophet preachers know that what the world needs most is that people recognize that Yahweh is the only real God and that people learn to do God's will. What the world needs is righteousness. You could translate that justice quite simply. Tzedek or tzedakah, two words used. They burst into prayer, ending with an assurance that prayer is being answered. Righteousness is sprouting up because God has created it. Isaiah 45, 9-13, if God so chooses, he can choose a foreign king to carry out his purpose. And then I'll go on and read for you. Chapter 45. I'll read it for you. I don't know why it's not there. Chapter 45, verse 18-19. For thus says Yahweh, who created the heavens, brackets, he is God, who formed the earth and made it, brackets, he established it. He did not create it a chaos. He formed it to be inhabited, close brackets. I am Yahweh. There is no other. I did not speak in secret in a land of darkness. I did not say to the offspring of Jacob, seek me in chaos. I, Yahweh, speak the truth. I declare what is right. And then a few verses later, turn to me and be saved, all the ends of the earth. For I am God and there is no other. By myself I have sworn, from my mouth has gone forth in righteousness a word that shall not return. To me every knee shall bend, every tongue shall swear. And I think you're familiar with that last line quoted by Paul twice in Romans and in Philippians. Then we come to chapter 46, which is in front of you now. And this is the bit of comic relief. chapter 4, at the expense of the Babylonian gods. So the Babylonian gods are being all, carts are being brought in, and some heavy gods being stuck on the back of a cart, and then it falls off, and they put it back on again, they wedge it in place, and then the carts start, start moving out, trundling out to the temple. And as the prophet preachers say, God speaking through, "Listen to me, O house of Jacob, all the remnant of the house of Israel, who have been born, carried by me from your birth, carried from the womb, even to your old age, Ani hu, I am he, ego eimi. Even when you turn grey, I will carry you." Thank God for that. "I have made and I will bear. I will carry and I will save. To whom will you liken me and make me equal and compare me as though we were alike?" And then he goes on to talk about the people resisting the thought that Yahweh could choose Cyrus because he's not a Jew, not one of us. So that wasn't a very pleasant thought. How could God, why wouldn't God, etc. And then the prophet preaches, taunt Babylon in chapter 47. And you'll have to read that for yourself. It's exciting reading. I went back to, I've got a page out of order. Right, I'll fix that later. Isaiah chapter 48. The people are being accused of being caught up in the surrounding idolatry. And the cry of the prophet is, and we conclude with this, "Go out from Babylon, flee from Chaldea. Declare this with a shout of joy, proclaim it, send it forth to the end of the earth. Say, Yahweh has redeemed his servant Jacob," or Israel, it's his servant, the people. "They did not thirst when he led them through the deserts. He made water flow for them from the rock. He split open the rock and the water gushed out. There is no peace, says Yahweh, for the wicked." Something that all our parents quoted from Isaiah chapter 48, the end of the chapter. And you'll find if you read the book of Revelations, which is all about the current then Roman Empire and what was happening in Eastern Turkey and all that, it also quotes this, like, get out of the, don't get caught up in the Roman Empire system. Hold on to your faith. Keep believing. Flee from this mess into your communion with God and your faith. So that completes chapter 48 and today's lecture.